So everyone is back again with full enthusiasm. What's happening? Chandrasekhar is displaying his excitement. Hare Krishna. And so we did up to Svetamanjari, right? So we start reading next to46, yeah? You did up to 45? 44. Okay. So Krishna is explaining that how when one becomes too materially attached or too much involved in enjoyment and acquiring opulences, then his determination for devotional service doesn't develop. Okay, Archana. So Krishna is telling Arjuna that previously, you remember, Krishna explained that the Vedas generally speak with flowery words, because they speak about sense gratification. So here Krishna is saying that the Vedas deal generally, apparently, Vedas deal with the three modes of material nature. That means the Vedas are dealing with the materialistic aspects. But he is telling Arjuna, you transcend that materialistic aspects of the Vedic instructions, and become situated on the transcendental platform. So what is the meaning of transcendental platform? Transcendental, what is the meaning of this word? How many of you who knows the meaning of this word, transcendental? Okay, Yadunath?
Beyond.
Very good. Transcendental means that is transcending the material nature or beyond this material nature. So what is beyond? Is there something beyond this material nature?
Yes.
What is there?
You.
So transcendental to the material nature means spiritual nature. Beyond matter is spirit. Or beyond this material nature is a spiritual reality. So Krishna is instructing Arjuna or advising Arjuna to transcend the material platform and come on to the spiritual platform. Why? What is the meaning of material platform? Material nature is the nature of sense gratification. There are two reality which are diametrically opposed, material nature and spiritual nature, or transcendental nature, as Krishna put it here. Now, what is the difference between material nature and spiritual nature? Who will answer this question? Yes?
One is material nature results in bondage, whereas spiritual nature is a liberation state.
Okay. Very good. Material nature is the nature of bondage, the spiritual nature is liberated. Okay, now what constitutes, anybody want to add more to this? What is material nature? Yes, Archana? Okay, very good. The spiritual nature is Satchidanand. Now what does it mean? Satchidanand? Okay. Material nature is temporary, spiritual nature is eternal. Sat, chit, or conscious. Material nature is inert, spiritual nature is conscious. And anand, joy. Material nature is miserable, and spiritual nature is full of joy. Very good. So these are the differences of material nature and spiritual nature. Now, any more information? Yes? Very good. Very good point. The material nature is the nature where everyone tries to enjoy his senses. And spiritual nature is the nature where everyone wants to serve Krishna. Right? Everyone wants to give enjoyment or pleasure to Krishna. Very good. Now, any more, Mother Krishna Priya? Just, yeah, say it again, I could. Material nature is under the control of Krishna's external energy, which is known as Mahamaya, who has various names like Kali, Durga, etc. And the spiritual nature is under the control of Krishna's pleasure potency, Srimati Radharani. Very good. Very good. In the spiritual nature, Krishna is personally present, and in the material nature, Krishna is indirectly involved. Krishna is not directly involved or present in this material nature. Krishna controls the material nature through his agents. Krishna has two agents for this material nature. One is Lord Shiva, and the other is Mahamaya. Krishna himself do not directly deal with the material nature. Very good. Very good points. And now the characteristics of material nature and spiritual nature, if we sum it up, what will be the summing up of these two natures? How do we summarize the material nature and spiritual nature? Okay. You want to say something, Jagannath? Yeah.
I was going to say that illusory, the spiritual nature is reality.
Very good, very good. So Jadunath summed it up as material nature is illusory and spiritual nature is reality. Okay, any more summing up? Another way to sum it up will be, the material nature is the nature of exploitation and spiritual nature is the nature of service. In the spiritual nature, everyone has this very, very intense desire to serve. Whereas in the spiritual, in the material nature, what is opposed to service? Opposed to service?
Lord it over.
Very good. And the lording over tendency is called the tendency of exploitation. Right? In the material nature, everyone is trying to exploit everything or everyone else. Whereas in the spiritual nature, everyone wants to serve Krishna. So that is the ultimate difference between material and spiritual. Like now if I asked you, if in this world, if you develop a service attitude, will you be in the material nature or spiritual nature? Spiritual nature. So this material nature and spiritual nature is ultimately not a geographical consideration. It is a matter of attitude. If we develop service attitude, we are in spiritual nature. If we develop exploitative attitude, we are in the material nature. So this world is actually a world of exploitation. But here, if we develop this attitude of service, then we will become situated on the spiritual nature. So, to go back, I'll repeat the translation again. The Vedas deal mainly with the subject of the three modes of material nature. O Arjuna, become transcendental to these three modes. Be free from all dualities and from all anxieties for gain and safety, and be established in the Self. Now, you may feel, you may think that Maharaj is reading something that is not exactly the way it's written in my book, isn't it? That's because I have the Bhagavad Gita, that was the old version, and you are reading the new version. And it was, Bhagavad Gita was edited, which created a big uproar, so much so that now, just a few years back, they printed, I don't know who, yeah, actually it is the BTG, I mean BBT, that printed, I think, this version. Or is it the same, or, everyone has the same, or did I, yours is different? Which version do you have? Let's see. Yeah, that's the new print. Okay. New print in the sense, that's the old one. And what I read is the edited version. Yeah. Anyway, the subject matter is the same, the translation is by Prabhupada, and mainly the purport is by Srila Prabhupada. That's the difference that it makes. There is no need to make a big issue out of it. Like, Jayadita Maharaj, who actually did the editing, and he did it with, he actually did the editing because he found out that Prabhupada's Gita, the Prabhupada's original translation, was edited by somebody where some places the spirit was missing. So he went back to Srila Prabhupada's translation, actually. But sometimes you get people, there are not sometimes, there are plenty of people who are just waiting for some opportunity to get on your case. So, but ultimately it is just, we have to take it with the right spirit, and there is nothing wrong in editing. Because I used to translate Prabhupada's books, and Prabhupada, I used to read them out to Srila Prabhupada. And sometimes I pointed out that something was not sounding right. And Prabhupada said, okay. And when he accepted it, he said, yeah, inform the BBT to correct it. So it's not that what was printed, that was the final version. Prabhupada was open to changes. And there are, another thing is that often Prabhupada actually dictated on dictaphone and it was transcribed. Sometimes the transcriber did not get the right word. So he got, but that was printed. Prabhupada did not check everything himself. Okay, so next, yes.
In your opening presentation, you spoke about the Vedas as Shruti, as common, that is accepted as ultimate authority. Here, Krishna is telling Arjuna that the Vedas mean the most important thing to transcend. So, how do we accept that?
Very good.
That's awesome.
Yes, very good point. Did everyone get it? He's saying on the first day I mentioned that the Vedas have to be accepted as the final authority. But here we are seeing that Krishna is saying that the Vedas have this materialistic side, so don't accept it. So he's saying, how do we accept it? How do we understand that? The answer to that is, therefore, you need a guide to study the Vedas. You need a teacher. It is the custom that the Vedic scriptures must be studied under the guidance of a qualified teacher or a bona fide spiritual master. Right? He reveals the actual meaning of the Vedas. It's the spiritual master who gives the right understanding. So in our case, who is giving us the right understanding? Srila Prabhupada. So is there anyone who knows Vedas better than Prabhupada? I'm asking you, does anybody know him better than Srila Prabhupada? And Srila Prabhupada knows the Veda the best possible way, aspect of the Vedas, or the best possible way, because Prabhupada is simply repeating the presentation of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Right? Prabhupada is presenting the essence of the Vedas according to his spiritual master's teachings. And in this way it goes back to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So, and here also, Krishna himself is saying that the Vedas are, you know, some parts of the Vedas are dealing with the materialistic aspects of three modes of material nature. So you transcend that. Right? So, when Krishna says that, what do we have to say? That's the ultimate. That's the ultimate. So the point here is, you see, any subject, any topic, you can look at it from two different ways. Especially, a profound subject like Vedas, which actually is meant for different classes of people. Everybody is not in the same level. You see, Veda is the total syllabus, starting from kindergarten to postgraduate. Now, when you go to kindergarten school, it is one kind of lesson, right? You go to primary school, another kind of lesson, right? Then you go to high school, another kind of lesson. Take any subject, say geography. When you study geography in primary school and you study geography in high school, is it the same geography? Same? Is it the presentation the same? No. Then when you go to college, the geography will be the same as high school. When you go to postgraduate, so this will differ. And here what Krishna is saying, transcendental. The Vedas are taking us to the transcendental. So transcend. Transcend means leaving behind, leaving below. Right? So when you're going to go beyond, then can you still dwell in this region? So that is the point Krishna is making. This aspect of Veda that I'm speaking about, the ultimate essence of the Vedas, are transcendental to the material nature. So that is, and what is the transcendental aspect? Beyond sense gratification, devotional service. So that is Krishna's driving at. Devotional service. Vyavasayatmika buddhi, he already said. So that vyavasayatmika buddhi or devotional service is the ultimate goal of the Vedas. So as I said, the Vedas must be studied under the guidance of a qualified teacher. So who can be more qualified than a teacher than Krishna? Can there be any better teacher than Krishna? So that's what we have to understand.
But if we have to debate with someone who says, well, but Bhagavad Gita is Smriti, so they're taking Vedanta or Upanishad's point of view, and they're saying, well, Bhagavad Gita is secondary, we have to accept that which is Shruti.
The Shrutis and Smritis, the Smritis are explaining the Shrutis. They are not contradicting the Shrutis. Especially the two scriptures like Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. And Vedas, you see, we have to understand that everything that has been said in the Vedas is given by Krishna. Right? But we have to understand that which aspect is the ultimate consideration. Like as I said, like Shruti, first of all, the Shruti and Smriti, the people, those who say, you said that I said that Shruti is the main part. I never said that. You said in the opening speech, I said Shruti is the main aspect of the Veda. I never said that. Did I say it myself? If that is the thing, like Shruti is the only part of the Vedas that is real and Smriti is not, then that's not our presentation, that's not our understanding. Like Smriti and Shruti is the part, the aspect of the Vedas that has been given. And Smriti is the aspect that is the way it is understood. Now tell me, knowledge and the understanding of the knowledge, is there any difference? If you say that Shruti is the knowledge and Smriti is the understanding of the knowledge, is there any difference? Those who say that the Shruti is the real knowledge and Smriti is secondary, they didn't understand. And you will find the problem with them is that they don't have a bona fide teacher. Because they don't have a bona fide teacher, they're just concocting, they're speculating about the Vedic wisdom. Now, if we say that Smriti, if I take this from your point, that Bhagavad Gita is Smriti, tell me which one is more important, Bhagavad Gita or Vedas? In that relation, Krishna himself is giving the essence of the Vedas. What is more important, the thing or its essence? Essence is more important. So this is the essence. So those who say that this is not, cannot be accepted, only the Vedas, Rig, Sham, Yajur, Atharva, are the Vedas, they are not knower of the Vedas. They are unfortunate living entities, who think that they are very learned, but actually their wisdom has been stolen by Maya. Mayaya aparhita jnana. Now, as you are saying that if there is an argument or debate, what do we do? If a dog barks, what do you do? Do you also bark back? Just disregard it. Because how will you reason with a madman? And how will you reason with a fool? Is he going to listen to any logic, reason and understanding? No, don't waste your time. Yes?
Mother, at the same point, I think, in India, Mother, if you go to certain temples, throughout the year, they take Krishna as one part of the year, and they think that is absolute.
Krishna?
One year is called Krishna as well, and they read only that book throughout their life.
Which book is that?
They call
Yajurveda,
they split up into two parts.
Yajurveda?
Yes.
Oh, I see, okay.
So one they call it Krishna Yajurveda, and they read that throughout their life, and they say it is Arjuna. So now, according to what you said, the problem is quoting also. And what I can understand is, Krishna is telling, you transcend, because the Vedas are speaking about three modes, you go beyond that. How to explain to them, because always this question comes. These are spoken directly, and your parampara is there in Madhvacharya is like Abhiyan Puranas, and when you see other parampara, they are not much based on Puranas. Once this question came up, actually.
Yeah, there will always be a difference between Madhvacharya and Shukracharya. So, if their parampara is Shukracharya's parampara, what can be done? They will always go for material sense gratification. Okay, next. Okay, so javan artha udapane sarvato sampluto dake. Just as all the purposes are served by the water in a small well, the purpose of the small well is served by a big reservoir of water, right? Similarly, all the purposes of the Vedas can be served to one who knows the purpose behind them. Now let's go back to that original point. What is the purpose behind them? What is the purpose of the Vedas? Purpose of the Vedas is to come to the point of understanding Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead and becoming His servant. So when you do that, when you become a devotee of Krishna, then all the purposes of the Vedas have been served, right? So that is the point. So when you become a devotee of Krishna, then it has to be understood that you have studied all the Vedas, you have mastered all the Vedas, because you have come to the ultimate point of understanding the Vedas. What's your name? Is it the first time you came to the class, or your morning? Oh, yesterday also. Okay, so you're doing Bhakti Shastri? No? You are just a guest listener. Yeah. Okay. So, you want to read it, Chandrasekhar?
Karma
Yeah. So, a servant, what is the business of a servant? Servant's business is to serve, which means that he works on behalf of his master, and he cannot expect the result of those actions. Say, for example, the master gives the servant $1 million to deposit in the bank. Right? So he's carrying that $1 million, and can the servant think that now I have become a millionaire? I got this million myself? If he does that, then he is not a servant anymore. If he does that, then what happens? He becomes a thief. So, a servant, if he wants to enjoy his master's or claim his master's property, what is meant for his master, if a servant wants to claim it as his, then he becomes a thief. That action is not proper. So, similarly, we are the servants of Krishna, so what should we do? We should serve Krishna. And where should the result of our activities go? Meaning, why are we whatever we are doing for what? When we, as a servant, we serve the master, then what are we actually doing? All that we are doing is meant for the master. Master to enjoy. It is not meant for his enjoyment. Like a servant cooks a very nice meal. Now, if he thinks that, I cook the meal and he eats it, then what will happen? Won't the servant fire him? He says, okay, I had enough of you. So similarly, we must recognize that we are the servants of Krishna. So whatever we are doing, we are doing for Krishna's pleasure, on behalf of Krishna. Whatever we are doing, the results must go to Krishna. Therefore, Krishna is telling Arjuna that you have the right to work, but you do not have any right over the results of your work. And when we act with that understanding, we become devotees of Krishna. Navin? Okay, so what Krishna is speaking here as yoga, what it actually is, what kind of yoga is this? Is this a yoga that people are practicing out there? Ramdev Baba and Ravi Shankar, they are teaching yoga, thousands of people are going there. Is this the yoga that they are teaching? So what kind of yoga that Krishna is speaking about here? This is the yoga of devotion. And yoga of devotion means become a servant of Krishna and act as his servant. That is the real yoga. Like Krishna is saying, perform your duty equipoised. Equipoised means, who can explain this word equipoised? Yes?
You are not attached to failure.
Right. He is not concerned about success or failure. He is not concerned about profit or gain. Right? That is the meaning of the word equipoised. He is equipoised. He is perfectly situated without leaning on this side or that side. Without being affected by either of the influences. When can one be such equipoised? only when one acts as a servant of Krishna. As long as we serve with our selfish motive, then what happens? We do something and we are always attached about the result. We are always concerned about loss and profit. I don't want to lose, I want to gain. Right? And when I gain, I feel happy. When I lose, I feel unhappy. So person who is affected by happiness and distress is not equipoised. Equipoised means one who is neither affected by happiness nor by distress. One who is not affected by loss or by gain. Not affected by defeat or victory. Yes. Yes, that's true. Yeah, that's true. But consider the attitude of a devotee and a gross materialistic person, right? Like a devotee also is concerned about executing his service to his spiritual master Krishna properly, right? He does feel joy when he has done that properly, and he does feel bad if he couldn't execute it properly, right? Because he is rendering his service, and naturally that desire for that, you know, success or failure, or the influence of success and failure is there. But although it is there, but he is not completely affected by that. Say for example, A devotee, even if a devotee is a failure, he does get affected, but not that badly affected. Whereas a materialistic person, when he is a failure, he is completely devastated, completely shattered. Why? Because for him, this plane is the absolute reality. Whereas a devotee knows that this is the temporary reality, and that is the absolute reality. And ultimately, Krishna is not really dependent upon my service. Or my spiritual master is not absolutely dependent upon my service. They are giving me an opportunity to serve, so I am simply taking advantage of that opportunity. So see the difference? Because a materialistic person does it only for himself, he is completely attached to that. Whereas a devotee, because he is doing it for somebody else, like as you mentioned, spiritual master, obviously his attachment is not that intense. But you know, human nature is like that. When you do something, when you execute it properly, we do feel good. But like for example, we see in the, you know, like this is the transcendental duality. In the transcendental platform also there is a duality. But that duality is dependent upon Krishna's perception. Krishna's perception. How Krishna will feel. Not how much I will gain, but how Krishna will feel, how my guru will feel. And that is causing the pleasure. And failure to do that is causing pain. So in the spiritual platform also there is pleasure and pain. But the basis of that pleasure and pain is completely different from the basis of pleasure and pain here. Here it is the self that is the cause of pleasure and pain. There it is Krishna or spiritual master or devotees is the cause of pleasure and pain, not my senses. Like again, we go back to that same point. Devotional service means giving pleasure to Krishna's senses. Right? In a material nature, how do we derive pleasure? When we successfully give pleasure to our senses, we call it pleasure. But in the spiritual platform, when you give pleasure to Krishna's senses, then we become happy. So next. So, Krishna is again going even deeper. He is saying, Arjuna, keep all abominable activities far distant by devotional service. What are the abominable activities? Abominable activities are activities for sense gratification. Right? What is actually abominable is desire for sense gratification. So Krishna is saying that cast aside this or cast them far away by devotional service. Get rid of your tendency for sense enjoyment, which is abominable, by being engaged in devotional service. And in that consciousness, surrender unto the Lord. And then he is again emphasizing that point, that those who want to enjoy the fruits of their works are misers. Those who want to enjoy the fruits of their works are misers. Who is a miser? That's a very nice point actually here. Who is a miser? What's the meaning of miser? Yes. Who keeps, not only keeps everything for himself, who doesn't use his wealth. He keeps his wealth, he never even uses for himself. Right? Who doesn't know how to properly utilize his asset. He is a miser. So where is the proper utilization of our wealth? The proper utilization of our wealth is in engaging it in Krishna's service. So those who do not do that, they are misers. And actually they are not only misers, they are thieves and bandits. Right? They're stealing. They're taking, like as I mentioned, if the servant in the master's house, he does something, but instead of offering to the master, if he takes it himself, then how will he be classified? So here the miser is a mild word that Krishna expressed, Krishna used. Actual word should have been a thief. Yes, next. Can you speak a little clearly? What?
Logic.
Two forty-six. What's that? Yeah, his transcendental realization. That's the logic he is using. Okay, read the verse.
Therefore, strive for yoga, which is the art of all work.
So a person who is engaged in devotional service, he transcends the world of duality, good and bad. What is the platform beyond good and bad? Transcendental. What does it mean? It means there everything is all good. Like sattva, and the transcendental or spiritual nature is known as suddha sattva, pure goodness. Material nature is mixed goodness. There is a consideration of good and bad. But the spiritual platform is all good. So when one is situated on the spiritual platform, he is transcendental to both good and bad. Next. Very good. By thus engaging in devotional service to the Lord, great sages or devotees free themselves from the results of work in the material world. In this way, they become free from the cycle of birth and death and attain the state beyond all miseries. So what is the... Art of all work, the way to do your work, how to do your work, how to do all, how to execute all your action. What is the art? That art is offer everything to Krishna, do everything for Krishna. That is the yoga. And what kind of yoga is that once again? That's bhakti yoga, bhakti. Bhakti means what? Doing every, jat karosi, jat asnasi, jat juhosi, dadasi. Whatever you do, do it for Krishna. So then what happens? Then if you do that, then you become perfectly situated in the transcendental platform, yoga, beyond the duality of the personal nature. That is the art of work. So try to master it.
Alright. How do you do that in practice and day-to-day work?
How do you do that?
Just by remembering all the time?
No. By realizing that you are doing it for Him and offering the results to Him. Like I'll give you an example. Say you are a householder. Right? You have a house. Now, you normally a man will think that it is his house. But do you think it is your house? Your house is it your house? Or Krishna's house? In the house, you make a temple, and then you feel that it is Krishna's house, and you as a servant, you are living in that house. Right? You have your family. You have your wife and children. But you recognize that they are not actually your wife or your children. They are actually Krishna's servants and maidservants. And in that house, you take care of them, other servants and maidservants of Krishna. And you facilitate them to render service to Krishna in the house. Right? Now, in order to maintain the house and Krishna's servants and maidservants, you need money. So, you work to earn money. But you are earning money for what? You are earning money to maintain Krishna's temple and Krishna's devotees. So in this way, all that you are doing is becoming utilized or becoming offered to Krishna or engaged in serving Krishna and pleasing Krishna. So this is the art of work.
But you don't do that while you are actually working.
Doesn't matter. The result, so that brings to the next point. The ultimate result of the action is where the result is offered. That action may not be done directly in serving Krishna. But if the result of that action is offered to Krishna, then the action also has been offered to Krishna. Right?
That comes in that satatam kirtanakaman mam, when he says, so that action also comes under that?
Well, say when you are working outside, you may not be able to chant the name of Krishna and glorify Krishna all the time. So it may not be in that category. That may be, like your mood will be, that platform or that state is a very advanced stage. But I haven't become that advanced now. But someday I pray that I can come to the platform when I can be constantly engaged in singing the glory of Krishna and preaching the glory of Krishna. Right? Okay, next. It's 51. If you have, Sharon, can you? Yeah, if you have difficulty reading the Sanskrit. Okay, good. Try. Very good. Good spirit. When your intelligence has passed out of the dense forest of delusion, you shall become indifferent to all that has been heard and all that is to be heard. So, meaning, when you transcend the material nature, then you have achieved the ultimate perfection. Then you'll remain indifferent to all that is below you in this material nature. And then you become situated in perfect spiritual platform. Next. Yes, so Krishna again is reminding that, reminding what is divine consciousness, or what happens when we transcend the material nature. That means when your mind is no longer disturbed by the flowery language of the Vedas. What are the flowery languages of the Vedas? Allurements for sense gratification. Even the Vedas, there are allurements for sense gratification. Like going to the heavenly planets, and enjoying in so many different ways, living for such a long time, having a body which is free from disease and old age and other kind of distresses. So these are kind of allurements. One may think that, oh, it will be so nice. But when one is undisturbed or remains unaffected by these kind of allurements, and when the mind becomes fixed in thinking about Krishna and being engaged in devotional service, then one achieves divine consciousness or Krishna consciousness. So in simple words, when one becomes Krishna conscious, then he is not affected by the allurements of the material nature. Beth? So Krishna described, when one becomes situated in the transcendental platform, then what happens? But now Arjuna is asking Krishna, what are the symptoms, what are the signs of the person who is situated on transcendental platform? How does he speak? Sthita pragasya ka bhasha, samadhisthasya krishava. The one whose consciousness is merged in transcendence, what are the symptoms? How does he speak? What is his language? How does he sit? And how does he walk? So how do we recognize a person who has become situated in transcendence? Next. So Krishna started to answer to Arjuna's question. Now, what is Arjuna's questions? How does a person who is situated on the transcendental platform speak? What kind of languages he uses? How does he sit? How does he walk? So Krishna started to explain that when a man gives up all varieties of desire for sense gratification which arise from mental concoction, and when his mind thus purified finds satisfaction in self alone. In the material platform, where do people find their satisfaction from? They find satisfaction from fulfilling their desires for sense enjoyment. That is how people try to enjoy and become satisfied in the material nature. But on the spiritual platform, how does he derive his satisfaction? In his self, not in his sense gratification. And then he is said to be in pure transcendental consciousness. Like, finding satisfaction in the self means he doesn't look for enjoyment outside. He derives his joy from within. Next. Hmm. Okay. So a sage of steady mind. Here we have to understand what is the meaning, what is this expression, what does this expression sage mean? This expression sage here is muni, is the word sage. It is actually implying a devotee. A person who has been engaged in devotional service to the Lord is a real muni, real rishi, real yogi, real sage. So, what is the symptom of such a sage or a devotee? Such a devotee who is completely engrossed in serving Krishna, his mind is not disturbed even in the midst of threefold miseries. And he is not elated or he is not excited when there is happiness. Dukkheshu anidvignamana. Udveg means mental tribulation. Generally, people, when they are in distress, what happens? When they have difficulties, then what happens? They become so perturbed, so disturbed. Their mind becomes disturbed. And when they are happy, then what happens? They become very excited. Right? But a devotee is not affected by these dualities of this material nature. Being engaged in the service of Krishna, they are transcendental to these dualities of the material nature, and they are free from attachment, fear and anger. Bita raga bhaya krodha. Bita means one who has become free from. He has become free from rag. Rag means attachment, bhoy means fear, and krodh means anger. Therefore, he is free from attachment, fear, and anger. So he is called a sage of steady mind. Sthitadhi. So Krishna, Arjuna wanted to know what is the symptom, and these are the symptoms of a person situated on transcendental platform. Yeah, Puja. In the material nature, in the material world, one who is unaffected by whatever good or evil he may obtain, neither praising it nor despising it, is firmly fixed in perfect knowledge. Like good or evil, as they come, he just faces it without being affected by it. He is situated in perfect knowledge. Once again, who is that person who is situated in perfect knowledge? A devotee of Krishna. And he is totally unaffected by the dualities of the material nature. Next. Yes.
So it seems that when you react to the negative, and get perturbed or depressed or like that, then that stops you from doing your service or duty. But then why the other side of that, as far as getting happy and excited and good things happen? Why is that a bad thing?
I'll come again.
The kind of the previous verse, not getting related when happy things are there, or not, or even this verse,
that reaction, because okay, then the lamenting and stress, that will stop you from doing your duty and doing your service and all. But why did that have the reaction to good things, like you're feeling happy and elated? What is bad in that? Why is that bad?
Like you're talking about in devotional service.
Devotional service.
Yeah, I actually explained that point just a little while ago when she asked that question. It's not that the devotees are totally insipid, right? The devotees also have their feelings of pleasure and pain, right? But that feeling of pleasure and pain is not dependent upon their sense gratification. It is dependent upon their service to Krishna. Right? Like, the difference between material and spiritual is, in a material platform, their sense gratification is the consideration. Anything that is pleasing to their senses is desirable. Anything that is distressful to their senses is undesirable. Whereas on the spiritual platform, whatever is pleasing to Krishna is desirable. What is not pleasing to Krishna is undesirable.
His same question, but from a material point of view, what's wrong if I just enjoy life with karma? Or what comes, the happiness that comes from the material point?
Yeah, you can enjoy, but for how long?
So what's the harm?
Okay, fine, carry on. And when some difficulties come in the form of old age and disease, I'll ask you, how are you enjoying now? Right? Because the material platform does offer some pleasure, but that is only temporary. It is not that there is no pleasure in the material platform, but that pleasure is interrupted, not uninterrupted. Right? And they are temporary. Now, if you see, and temporary, because it's temporary, after the pleasure, when pain comes, the pain becomes more acute. You see, if you're enjoying, and after the enjoyment, if the distress comes, when a rich man becomes poor, all of a sudden, he becomes miserable. Right? But if a poor man becomes even poorer, he doesn't feel so bad. Right? So, when the distress comes after enjoyment, that distress is more painful. So do you want to plunge yourself into more pain, or you want to transcend pain? The best way to transcend is by Krishna consciousness. Okay. Yes. So one who is able to withdraw his senses from sense objects, as the tortoise draws its limbs within the shell, is firmly fixed in perfect consciousness. So the symptom of a person situated or fixed in perfect consciousness is one who can withdraw the senses from the objects of the senses. Now again, how is it possible? How is it possible? By being Krishna conscious. If I think that these objects are meant for my sense enjoyment, then naturally I'll become drawn towards it. But if the object is there, but if I know that it is not for my enjoyment, it's for Krishna's enjoyment, then what happens? Then I withdraw? So this is the sign of a sthita pragya or a pure devotee. A pure devotee always sees everything as meant for Krishna's enjoyment. He never sees anything as an object for his sense enjoyment. Therefore, he is able to withdraw his senses from the objects of his senses. Yeah. Next. On the other hand, if one is not Krishna conscious, without Krishna consciousness, he is trying to withdraw his senses from the objects of the senses. What will happen to him? He may go to a mountain cave, he may live there, meditating, he may try to withdraw his, control his senses, but what will happen? His mind will be dwelling in the objects of sense enjoyment. Because he doesn't have a higher taste. Right? Because since he doesn't have a higher taste, his mind will always hankering for some taste. Now, when you don't have a higher taste, then what is the option left to you? You are stuck with the lower taste. Huh? Lower taste means sense enjoyment. So although he is artificially trying or forcibly trying to control his senses, but his mind will be dwelling in the objects of the senses. But seizing such engagements by experiencing the higher taste, he is fixed in his consciousness. When he gets the higher taste, then he doesn't care for the lower taste. When you have the higher taste, then you don't hanker for the lower taste. Now here, what is the lower taste? Sense gratification. What's the higher taste? Krishna consciousness. So when you have tasted the Krishna consciousness, do you hanker for lower taste, for sense gratification? No. Isn't it real? Isn't it practical? Yes.
I was just wondering, because the living entity is by nature active, and the soul is always active, but these people who are only because of suffering, they only want to merge in this Brahma Jyoti. If I think, this is actually possible for someone to this meditation at home, or just think of nothing, is that at all possible for a while?
You see, by practicing yoga, one can come to the platform of Brahman realization. But this Brahman realization, because there is no engagement, one cannot stay there for very long. The Brahman realization, merging into Brahman, is higher than the material involvement. But it is not the ultimate perfection of a living entity's existence. Because a living entity is active. Right? And this activity comes from desire. This activity comes from desire for joy. Everybody is searching for joy. Everybody wants to enjoy. Everybody wants to be happy through enjoyment. So that is the nature of a living entity. So until and unless he gets that state of enjoyment, he cannot become fixed up. And this enjoyment is derived out of reciprocal relationship. One cannot enjoy by himself. He can be peaceful being alone in a beautiful situation, but he cannot enjoy. Like in a big palace, a person living alone can be peaceful, right? But when he wants to enjoy, what does he do? He calls his friends and have a party, right? So the enjoyment comes out of reciprocation of relationship. And that the foundation for the reciprocation of relationship is love. So love is the foundation for real enjoyment. Now in Brahma Jyoti, is there anybody else? One is alone by himself. For how long he'll be able to last there? He'll say, I'm getting bored being alone. Therefore he comes down again. Prabhupada time and time again pointed out that they go to Brahma Jyoti, but then they again come back. They go on top of Himalayas to meditate, but then they come back and open hospitals. Right? They get into all kinds of benevolent activities. Why? Because, you know, they didn't really get that pleasure out of there. So, now there is, you see, there is a situation of Brahman realization, but that Brahman realization is one stage which one ultimately transcends by the direction of a bona fide spiritual master. You see, on spiritual path, you have to have a guide, and that guide is a spiritual master. Right? And he guides you. Like some people may need to go to Brahma Jyoti. But then the spiritual master will guide him out of Brahma Jyoti into the spiritual platform, where he will be engaged in devotional service. So devotional service is the ultimate, goal, is the last word. So unless and until one goes to that platform, one cannot be satisfied. Yes. No, I was. She asked the question.
My husband, she has all the knowledge given by Prabhupada in his books. Is it possible for somebody to just read his books since it's coming from Prabhupada? Is it possible for someone to achieve perfection just by reading Prabhupada's books without approaching?
So, if one is reading Prabhupada's books, what is Prabhupada's book saying? Isn't Prabhupada's book saying that one should take shelter of a spiritual master? So, if one reads Prabhupada's books but doesn't take shelter of a spiritual master, when the spiritual masters are available? If the spiritual master is not available, then it's another thing. If one is some remote part in the Canadian prairie, yeah, still, she's saying, Bhakti Mark Maharaj. So even in Canadian prairie, you can get a spiritual master. So when you have a spiritual master available and you don't surrender to a spiritual master, what does it mean? It means you didn't understand Prabhupada's books. Right? Or it means that you couldn't become humble enough to surrender yourself. Right? So either way, if you're not humble enough or you don't understand Prabhupada's books, it means the same. You are not really you will not be able to derive the ultimate benefit of reading Prabhupada's books. Yes.
Maharaj, just trying to think about the previous verse, especially in the higher taste. What is the fate of somebody who has not yet got a higher taste and, you know, is actually trying? Still is attached to the lower taste.
He should follow the instruction of Srila Prabhupada in the association of devotees. He should practice the process. Right? One may not get the higher taste immediately, but one must continue to practice. So that is how one will ultimately come to the platform for getting the higher taste. Yes.
Somebody is destined to go to Brahman, spiritual master will bring him from that platform to devotion service and send him to spiritual world. Why in the first case that person is destined to go to Brahman?
What's that?
Why in the first case that person is destined to go to Brahman? Is there any sampradaya that they take them to Brahman from their spiritual master position?
There are many individuals who were in that, Brahman realized stage. Like the four Kumaras were in Brahman realization. Narad Muni was, Sukhdev Goswami was. Not so much Narad Muni, Sukhdev Goswami was. So, and there are some sampradayas that aspire from Brahman realization. But those sampradayas are not really considered to be bona fide in that sense. Only bona fide sampradayas are the Vaishnava sampradayas who go to Vaikuntha.
What is the exact difference between Vaikuntha and Vaishnava?
Okay, I wanted to add here. Like they were in the Brahman realization platform, but then they transcended that platform, right? Like the four Kumaras, by smelling the lotus and the Tulasi Manjari at the lotus feet of the Lord, they developed attachment to the Lord. Similarly, Sukadeva Goswami, by the mercy of Vasudev, he came to the platform of devotional service.
But in the holy state,
no, there are others also. There are others also. Okay, very good point. Let's see how much time I have. Okay. You see, in simple words, Brahmavadis are positive impersonalists, and Mayavadis are negative impersonalists. The difference between Brahmavad and Mayavad is, you see, Brahmavadis understand that Brahman is the energy and this material nature is the transformation of Brahman. So they think that Brahman is the ultimate and material nature is a transformation of Brahman. So, in relation to the material nature, Brahman is ultimate. Because everything is a transformation of Brahman. And therefore, when they are exposed to the understanding that this energy has an energetic, right? Brahman is the emanation of Parabrahma, right? Then they can very easily accept it, right? Therefore, it is in a positive direction. It's a positive impersonalism. But Mayavad is negative impersonalism. Negative because Mayavad was propounded by Shankaracharya to bewilder the demons. So Shankaracharya actually came up with a new theory. Originally, there is a Vedic understanding of Brahman, which is known as Brahma Parinambad. Brahma transforms into Maya or material nature. Brahma is transformed into material nature. Right? Purinam means transformation. It became something else, just like milk becomes yogurt. It's Purinam, transformation. Milk is transformed into yogurt. So Brahman became material nature. Right? Transformed into Sarvang Khallidam Brahma. Everything is a manifestation of Brahma. But Shankaracharya came and developed a new theory called Vivartavad. This Vivartavad theory is that Vivarta means illusion. Therefore, this theory is also called Mayavad. Maya is another name of illusion. So this Vivarta means it is not there, but it appears to be like that. Like he gives the example that in the mirage, it appears that there is water, but there is no water. It is illusion. It's due to illusion we are thinking that there is water. He gave an example. A rope is mistaken to be a snake. The rope is not snake, but it appears to be a snake. Right? So this is the examples of Vivarta. So this material nature is illusory. Therefore, his principle was Brahma Satya Jagan Mitha. This Jagat is Mitha, false, Maya. Therefore, it is called Mayavad. Okay, now you see why this theory is extremely dangerous. Because then the configuration came, then what about the incarnations? Right? Incarnations of the Lord. They can't deny that. So he said that the form of the Lord is Maya in goodness. And jivas are Maya in passion and ignorance. Right? So when a jiva comes to goodness, then he becomes Narayan or Ishvara. And beyond that, beyond Sattagun, beyond Rajatama and Satya is Brahman. So Brahman is the ultimate absolute truth. So which is saying that Narayan is below Brahman and Brahman is beyond Narayan. Narayan is actually a transformation of Brahman. Brahman is Nirakar. No form. But Brahman takes a form in goodness. Then that is Ishwar, God. And when Brahman takes a shape in passion, it's human beings and etc. etc. Demigods.
All the devatas, the Narayan,
the Brahman. No, Narayan is a mode of goodness. Devatas are not. Devatas are also in passion. So you see the difference, like why it is considered to be negative. Because the Brahmavadis have a possibility of accepting Narayan. But the Mayavadis do not have any possibility of accepting the Supreme Personality of Godhead as long as they hold on to this theory. Therefore, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, Mayavadir bhashya sunile hai sarvanash. If one even listens to the Mayavadi's commentary, he is doomed. So if you hear, even see a Mayavadi, take a bath with your clothes on. Their association is so contaminating. So this is the, in short, this is the difference between Brahmavad and Mayavad. And Ramanujacharya defeated Shankaracharya's theory?
Yes.
Okay. Ramanujacharya said, fine. There is no water in Miraj, and it appears to be water. There is no snake in the rope, but it appears to be snake. It's illusory. But somewhere water must be existing, that's why you're mistaking the Miraj to be water. Right? Somewhere the snake must be existing, that way, that's why you are mistaking the rope to be a snake. So where is the real snake and where is the real water? That real snake and real water is beyond Brahman, the transcendental reality. Therefore, in this way, Ramanujacharya actually defeated Shankaracharya's Kevala Daitavad through his Vishishta Daitavad. Yes.
As we're going through these verses, I was wondering, is there different levels of personhood? Because in the, when Krishna started his reply, he said, when a man gives up all her ideas of desire for sense gratification, and in this 59, he says that even though the taste for sense are remains. So I'm just wondering, you know, there are different, who is fixed in consciousness? It is some different categories of transcendentalism.
Okay. So someone is trying to be free from desire for sense or attachment for sense enjoyment. Yeah? But if the taste remains, like desire for the sense enjoyment remains, then he will fall down. Because you see, he is kind of suspended, right? He doesn't have any substance to hold on to. And his attachment is here. So what will happen? Eventually he'll come back here, right? But for a person who has got the taste, higher taste, he found the substance, right? So he has the platform to hang on to or hold on to. Therefore, he is not going to fall. He is not going to come back to the lower taste. It's clear.
So the other one, when a man gives up all varieties of desires, that one has to be understood. He doesn't have any more taste for such gratification.
Well, sometimes some yogis, you know, they try to artificially give up their sense enjoyment. They try to artificially do that by, you know, withdrawing the senses through the process of yoga, withdrawing the senses from the objects of the senses. Right? Like there are many such people, like Vishwamitra, he was performing austerities for 64,000 years. What he was trying to do is artificially withdraw his senses from the objects of the senses. And then one day he just heard the ankle bell of a dancing girl. And he opened his eyes and saw this beautiful apsara. Fell down. Why? Because he didn't have a substance to hold on to. He didn't get the higher taste. Right? And where does the higher... The point I'm trying to make is that where does the higher taste come from? What is the meaning of the higher taste? The higher taste is the nectar one derives by rendering devotional service to Krishna's lotus feet. When he gets that taste, then everything becomes insignificant compared to that. Like you come to New Vrindavan and you get fresh cow's milk, right? When you get the fresh cow's milk, do you want to buy the milk from the shop, which is, you know, and half milk, half water, and God knows what else is there. Will you want that? So when you get the real thing, why should you go for a spurious thing? Okay, next, yeah. What's that? Acharyas? You see, Shankaracharya himself was a devotee. But he came and propounded Mayavad to bewilder the demons. So that philosophy is still here to bewilder the demons. So those who are demoniac, they are holding on to the Maya, Shankaracharya's Mayavan. But Shankaracharya is a devotee. He has told everybody, Bhaja Govindam, Bhaja Govindam, Bhaja Govindam Murhamate. So if they are followers of Shankaracharya, then why shouldn't they worship Govinda? Why aren't they worshipping Govinda? So that means they are not true followers of Shankaracharya. And especially now that Prabhupada came and gave Krishna consciousness so extensively, and if still they do not accept it, what does it mean? It means that their mentality is crooked. Sachimata? Yeah, so the same point, until and unless one gets the shelter of the lotus feet of Krishna through devotional service, he is susceptible to fall down. Because he is susceptible to fall down because his senses are so strong that they are going to drag him down to the platform of sense gratification. Next.